Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to in-depth stories on BBC Podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get award-winning storytelling from the BBC like World of Secrets, Believe in Magic and Uncanny, plus other great BBC podcasts from news to history to comedy, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Mark Lowen, and welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. We bring people together to share their experiences, and this time we hear from people living among violence and drug wars in Mexico. In recent weeks, drug gangs have been making one of the world's most dangerous countries even more threatening. In today's edition, we talk to residents who fear they could be killed when out on the streets, and to journalists who are threatened for trying to report on what is happening.
They did an image by computer where I was seated and other person was pointed at me with a gun. I still dreaming with that image.
Claudia Sheinbaum, the former mayor of Mexico City, climate scientist and Nobel Peace Prize winner, broke boundaries a few weeks ago when she became the country's first female president. One of her first pledges was to deal with the continuing drug-related violence. Reports from local associations suggest around 200 people have been killed and a similar number are missing since the beginning of September. Described as one of the world's most powerful gangs, the Sinaloa drug cartel has been involved in shootings with rival gangs for weeks. In Sinaloa State in the north of Mexico, Independence Day celebrations were cancelled and schools closed on safety grounds. My colleague Krupa Padi spoke to two people living in the state capital of Culiacán. They are Carlos, who's a film curator, and 15-year-old Rosa.
It feels like when it was the whole thing of COVID-19, because, well, we've had online classes, but at the same time, we can hear some gunshots every now and then.
That's not normal, is it?
Unfortunately, here is quite normal.
Carlos, what about you? What's life become like?
It's always been one of the most dangerous cities in the world, but we're not proud of that. There are other things, but yeah, it feels pretty much like the confinement we felt during COVID. The streets are empty and it's very startling. You can feel the dread in the air. You can hear some shootings, and what it doesn't help is the fake news. People usually in social media post causing more alarm, so it doesn't help. So that contributes to the panic. But we're in a current state of dread, and so you cannot get a regular life. It may seem for people outside of the country that we're used to violence, but we're not. We're really not used to it. I mean, at least myself, I cannot ever get accustomed to that, you know, because it's a terrible thing. I mean, I work in the arts and we're trying to make things better for people to get their spirits up. But this situation doesn't help. So it's affecting the economy and your normal everyday life.
Rosa, you're just 15 years old. You are so young. You're studying. But what does that mean on a day-to-day basis when you wake up in the morning to when you go to sleep in the evening?
Honestly, I wake up, I make myself breakfast, and then I open up my social media expecting some sort of news about the whole situation. In this last few days, there's been several times where we were told that, oh, you will go back to normal classes tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes and boom, then we are locked in our own houses for the rest of the week. And the worst part of it all is that I'm currently on exams. I'm supposed to be at school preparing for them. And honestly, it affects not only me, thousands of students because we need to go to school to gain back our motivation. But even if we are quote-unquote safe in our own houses, we can't study knowing that at any moment there could be someone with a shotgun outside of our door.
And what do you do to protect yourself?
This is going to sound a bit weird, but I have a metal baseball bat in my bed. And I know it's not going to exactly protect me from someone who has a gun, but at least it gives me some sort of sense of safety.
You can walk out and it seems peaceful, but at any given moment, something could happen. You know, we're not safe, you know. We think we're safe, but we'll never know what happened. But we try to keep our mind calm and stay off social media, really. But we need to get informed, you know, be informed. But unfortunately, it's more the negative aspect of social media that affects your mental health.
And Carlos, it's home for you. You've lived there for the majority of your life. But Sinaloa and the cities inside the state have been used as a battleground, as a stronghold for the Sinaloa cartels for decades. And knowing that, you still want to stay there?
Yeah, I'm divorced, but I have my kids here and it's home. For better or worse, you get to hope things will get better. But that this is a place I was born and I have my life here. So, you know, what can you do? But hope for the best. But I mean, not in any way accepting this way of things getting out of hand, you know?
I hate to admit it, but I don't want to live here anymore. Once I'm able to live by myself, once I turn 18 and I go to college, I think you call it, I'd like to live, not the country, but at least Culiacán. And if it's possible, Sinaloa. Because I'm aware that it has to do with both the whole cartel things and lots of political things that I maybe don't understand because of my age. But at the same time, it's quite tiring to think that, oh my God, this is happening constantly. It's happening every year. And I don't want to live with the idea that every year I'm going to be with my life in risk of dying. And I am someone who has the privilege of being on a really nice home with loving parents, in a really nice school. And if I don't feel safe with any of that, imagine the people who don't. So, yeah, that's why I want to leave this place once I'm old enough.
It's sad to say it, but if I had the chance and the means, I would go out also, you know, because it's getting too living hell. It's getting too dangerous here.
Carlos and Rosa in Sinaloa's state capital, Culiacán. As we heard a moment ago from Carlos, despite its prevalence, those trying to have a normal, peaceful life in Mexico never really get used to the violence. Our guests say various factors contribute to it, but for decades the driving factor has been the drugs trade. For some residents, the pain is not knowing what has become of a loved one who has gone missing. They're known collectively as the disappeared. So we brought together two women in Sinaloa who are still looking for their relatives. They are Maria Isabel, whose son disappeared in 2017, and Alma Rosa, who you'll hear first. She last saw her brother 15 years ago.
We have so many memories, it's even hard to tell you, but the last memories I have of my brother were from 2 days before he was taken away. My brother came home after working in the field. That day, I cooked fried chicken for breakfast, and I knew he liked it a lot, so I said I was going to make it for him. He brought some friends around. The last time I saw him was on Saturday night in July 2009. When I saw him, he told me he would come early on Sunday and would bring some prawns so I could make some ceviche, because he said I was very good at cooking it. Sometimes I chat to him in my mind and ask him, when are you going to come back and bring those prawns?
It is difficult to speak of the memories of a relative without them hurting, without feeling a lump to your throat when naming them. But in the end, those are the only memories we live with. I have lots of memories of Josimar. He loved to cook. He loved his work because it was his life. He was also a rapper and he released a song 3 months before he disappeared. He also loved to draw and I keep many of his drawings as well as the words he had in a notebook. I made an album with them and I treasure all these things, even the presents he gave me. So those are the beautiful bits that make us remember the moments together so we don't forget them. We call out their names so they're never forgotten. That too is a memory and a way to remember them. That is the living memory.
Y es memoria para ellos también, es memoria viviente. En el 2017, la violencia se desató con bastante fuerza.
In 2017, violence broke out quite strongly. It started in 2016 and my son was caught in the crossfire between two cartels. At that time, there was a fight between two drug lords, El Chapo Guzmán and El Licenciado. And my son's job as a police officer caused him to disappear. He went on to help some soldiers who were victims of a bombed attack in Culiacán. He was one of the first policemen to come in to assist those soldiers, and that is how my son's disappearance came about. I think we have been deeply hurt by the violence of the drug traffickers, and even more so when they engage in their endless wars in which the authorities have no control and can't do much to pacify the population and provide security for the citizens, and especially for our families. We are constantly living in this terror and the fear of coming across a stray bullet or experiencing something like what happened to our relatives. We live in a lot of fear and we are very afraid to go out in the streets.
Y con mucho temor de salir a las calles.
La violencia afecta a nuestras familias tanto emocionalmente.
The violence affects our families both emotionally as well as in their way of living. We are locked up. This affects everything and everyone in Culiacán and Sinaloa. We are living in the ugliest situation possible, a scenario that we have never lived through before. I suffer for my brother's disappearance up to this day because so far I have not been able to find him. And the people who took him were well looked after by the government, by the police. They took him out of the house. And from that moment on, we got involved in this as the family, as Maria Isabel says. We all carry a sad weight on our shoulders because we cannot find them, because we have a government that doesn't do things the way it should. Because there is no prosecutor who can send investigators that work the way they should to move forward. Unfortunately, the families are the ones who have to carry all this burden. We cannot overcome this and we cannot stop looking for them because they are our blood, they are our children, they are our brothers and sisters. As Maria Isabel says, how are we supposed to stop? There are people requesting our support so we can go out in search of their missing relatives. Yes, sometimes we go and talk to the families, but what else can we do?
Vamos con la familia y platicamos, pero ¿qué hacemos?
Creo que, pues, ¿qué más quisiéramos nosotros? Bien lo dice la compañera Alma Rosa. Quisiéramos salir y buscar.
As Alma Rosa said, what more would we want than to go out and look for them? Because the families that are going through this new situation ask us to support them. They think that we can do it. We can help them find them. However, we are also mothers. We are sisters, daughters, aunts, nephews and nieces. Yes, we feel the need to go out and look for them, but we also have the need to stop. Because we can't get in the way of this wave of violence. We don't know if it might reach us by mistake. We are not heroes either. I think that what we are experiencing right now in Sinaloa is terrible. As families are the ones suffering the consequences of this. We're worse off now than before the pandemic because we can't really go out. We are afraid to go out to the shops. Our children are not going to school. It's hard to find the right words to explain this psychosis.
Una psicosis indescriptible.
Así es. Se han puesto las cosas más difíciles.
Things have become more difficult because, as Maria Isabel says, we can't go and look for people. But we need to do it because even if they are not our family, they are people, they are human beings who need to go back to their families. So we feel desperate. We feel like our hands are tied up even to make a living, to go out, to look for food. With this violence wave, we are worse off than ever, to be honest. I don't know, I never thought I would experience it this way. No, we are afraid, but the urge to look for them, to find them, is what makes us overcome this fear. But they can come after us. We are an easy target for them. We don't have weapons. It is very difficult what we're going through right now.
Es muy difícil lo que estamos viviendo ahorita.
Bueno, yo creo que la incapacidad o la omisión del gobierno.
I think my anger is about the government's inability or omission to do anything and leave people on their own. Because that's how we feel. We feel abandoned by the government. We feel unprotected. Sometimes the first thing you do when you see the police is go and hide because often you don't know whether to be vigilant for what they do or to ask them to protect you. We live in a stateless place. Here, life is not guaranteed. You don't know if you will go missing or not, and with the new government, I believe that things are going to get even worse. The disappearances have not been an issue in the agenda of the new president, Claudia Sheinbaum. I think the omission from the authorities is the saddest thing, knowing that they can do nothing. Even hearing the commander of the armed forces saying that state peace does not depend on them, but depends on crime and their ability to calm down. What about us citizens then? Who's going to look after us?
Entonces, ¿en manos de quién estamos nosotros los ciudadanos?
Alma Rosa and Maria Isabel in Sinaloa, whose brother and son are still missing after their disappearance. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations on living alongside Mexico's drug gangs from the BBC World Service.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to in-depth stories on BBC Podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get award-winning storytelling from the BBC like World of Secrets, Believe in Magic and Uncanny, plus other great BBC podcasts from news to history to comedy, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
When she was sworn in as president a fortnight ago, Claudia Sheinbaum spoke of having a security plan that would focus on gathering intelligence on the cartels and addressing the social causes of violence. It is a plan not without its criticism, though. In this edition, we have heard claims of corruption between some public officials and organized crime. And in the last few days, Mexico's former top security chief was sentenced in the United States to 38 years in prison for taking bribes from the Sinaloa cartel. Bringing someone to justice where organized crime is involved takes courage, and so does reporting on it. Being a journalist in Mexico is a deadly business. Two people with experience of this are Alejandra Ibarra Chaul, who is in Mexico City and heads an archive and podcast which preserves the work of murdered journalists, and Violeta Santiago, an investigative reporter at Quinto Elemento Lab. She spoke to us from the port city of Veracruz, which is in the east of the country.
Veracruz is the most dangerous state to be a journalist in Mexico. We had to learn about human rights violations, clandestine graves, about disappeared people at the same time as our colleagues were being murdered. In Veracruz, more than 30 journalists have been murdered in the last 15 years. And although the situation has also worsened in other parts of the country, Veracruz continues to lead the way.
You mentioned some of the numbers there, 163 journalists killed in Mexico since the year 2000, according to civil society organizations. Where does this violence come from?
There are two main types of violence. Physical violence is so important as economic violence. In states like Veracruz, Tamaulipas, Michoacán, Guerrero, journalist salaries can be very low. Around 6,500 pesos or 9,000 pesos for month.
About $450, US dollars.
And that's important because it's often believed that the main source of physical violence comes from the narco.
drugs cartels.
Yeah, but in reality, those attacks comes from almost as journalists are politicians or agents of the state, such as police of the army. It was very common that the politicians say that we had to do with the narco, for example, to criminalize the journalists, or they said often that we were not a journalist because sometimes we do other works like sell hamburgers or hot dogs or some food to have more income. And for that reason, when aggression against a journalist were committed, then the politicians said, well, that's not a problem because they were not really journalists. The main source of physical violence comes from politicians.
I agree with what Violeta is saying. And maybe one of the things that makes this really hard to grasp or to come to terms with is the fact that 89% of these crimes remain unsolved, despite people in the communities where the journalists live know that the people behind these attacks are politicians. It's really frustrating and it's really sad that they are never brought to justice. So, for example, in Veracruz, specifically where Violeta is from, there's at least 4 cases where journalists were killed. And there's a warrant for the arrest of aldermen, mayors, congressmen, who allegedly are the masterminds of the crimes, who hired hitmen and people from organized crime to carry out the crimes, but they didn't plan them. And these politicians that are oftentimes small-time politicians and local authorities are never, ever brought to justice. If I'm correct, and I think last time I checked, I am, there's not a single mastermind imprisoned in Mexico for ordering the killing of a journalist, which is absolutely mind-blowing.
Do you feel that the narrative of saying this is narco groups or mafias or cartels is in a way kind of absolving the state of its protection for journalists and an easy way out for the politicians to just blame the mafias?
I think that's absolutely correct. And I think it's not only letting the politicians and the state off the hook, but I also think that it's not allowing Mexico itself to properly identify and understand the problem in order to create better public policy to prevent it.
What are some of the threats that you two yourselves have faced?
I had death threats.
Death threats.
Yeah. For a local mayor, and that was very awful because they did some images with my head and my corpse as a dead woman. In part, they did an image by computer where I was seated and other person was pointed me with a gun. I still dreaming with that image. And all of this was because I was reporting about local corruption, but I didn't stop. But it was a very hard moment for me and my family too, because in one time I think that I could die because I was a journalist.
Mexico City has some sort of protective layer of itself. But we covered the murder of a journalist who was killed in a neighboring state in 2019 for a podcast series. And when we went to do that reporting, people were very skeptical about talking to us just because a lot of people from the communities where journalists have been murdered have also themselves learned to keep quiet and have learned to be in silence as a means of protecting themselves. So it was a really hard reporting trip and a really hard investigation. And one of the people we talked to was one of the team members of the mayor at the time, who was sort of rumored to have ordered the killing of this journalist. And when we finally left this town, this person from the mayor's team started calling my phone. And he would say disguised threats, because he would want to know if we were outside of town, if we needed someone to escort us. There's a saying in Spanish, ponernos el dedo, if someone had sort of like signaled us as people who were investigating the murder. And he kept saying, like, things are very sketchy here, like you wouldn't be able to know, like, who's sort of like following you. So the people that did talk to us said, like, we don't know if the people sitting next to us are sort of spying for the local government or for the drug dealing group here. And when we finally aired the trailer for the investigation, the podcast series, the entire team got people trying to get into our social media accounts, which again, compared to what Violeta has been through, is so mild. But it's just like one of the smallest things that you can experience for trying to get to the truth.
Journalists Alejandro Ibarra Chaul and Violeta Santiago on the difficulties and dangers of reporting on organised crime. I'm Mark Lowen, and you've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to in-depth stories on BBC Podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get award-winning storytelling from the BBC like World of Secrets, Believe in Magic and Uncanny, plus other great BBC podcasts from news to history to comedy, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.